Welcome to SCOTUS Cast. I saw the sign edition. Thank you for tuning in. On January 12, 2015, the Supreme Court heard oral argument in Reed v. Town of Gilbert. This case involves a First Amendment challenge to the Town of Gilbert, Arizona's sign code, which effectively treats certain religious signs differently than other non-religious signs. The question is whether Gilbert's assertion that it has no discriminatory motive legitimizes the facially neutral code's disparate effect on religious signs. To discuss the case, we have Hans A. von Spakovsky, who is Senior Legal Fellow and Manager of the Civil Justice Reform Initiative at the Heritage Foundation. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Mr. Spakovsky.
This case, Reed versus Town of Gilbert, Arizona, was the first case up for argument this morning. And it was actually very interesting getting to the court because of various delays of the federal government and schools opening because of ice and freezing rain in the Washington area. But all the members of the court managed to get there, as did the lawyers. This is a case that actually was first filed in 2007, so it's been going on now for a number of years. The plaintiff, Reed, is Pastor Clyde Reed, who's the head of the Good News Community Church in Gilbert, Arizona. And the case is a First Amendment challenge over a very strict and, frankly, complex sign ordinance that the city of Gilbert, Arizona has in place. The Good News Community Church does not have a permanent structure, so they move around the town of Gilbert, holding services on Sundays, and they hold it at different places as they can get them, for example, in elementary schools. In order to be able to get people to their church, they have to put up temporary signs that tell people where the church services are going to be on Sunday. The town of Gilbert, as I said, has a very complex set of rules governing different kinds of signs. And it's actually kind of interesting because the rules are so complex that the plaintiffs in this case actually in the brief put something that you don't often see in Supreme Court briefs, which is they put in photographs, actual photographs, for example, of the kind of signs that they try to use to direct people to their church, and they also had to put in graphs to try to explain the different rules that apply to signs. And to give an example of the issues that are going on here is the city has different rules, for example, for what they call political signs. They have another rule for what they call ideological signs. They have another rule for event signs, another rule for real estate signs, and another rule for homeowners association signs. And the complaint that the church has is that under the rules that apply to the church for their Sunday services, they're only allowed to put their direction sign up 12 hours before church services, which means, in essence, that if they're going to have a morning service on Sunday, their sign is only going to go up late Saturday night when it's already dark and people will have a hard time seeing the sign, and they have to take it down within 1 hour. On the other hand, real estate signs, for example, for a open house on a Sunday, which again is a temporary direction sign, kind of very similar to what the church has, those can get put up 16 hours before an event and don't have to be taken down until 36 hours after. If a homeowners association is having an event, their temporary sign can be up for actually 30 days prior to the event, and then they have 2 days to take it down. Political signs have the longest period of time. They can be up for almost 5 months prior to election. There's something like, I believe, 15 days, so a little more than 2 weeks for the candidates to get those signs down after the election. And not only are the time and manner restrictions different, but homeowner signs, for example, can be up to 80 square feet. Political signs can be up to 32 square feet. An ideological sign can be up to 20 square feet, yet the church's invitational sign can't be larger than 6 square feet, much smaller, making it much harder to see. In addition, political signs have the right to be placed in the public right of way, something the church, again, is not allowed to do. So the church's main argument under the First Amendment is, you know, they're not asking for any special privileges, any special rules for them that would give them a bigger advantage over others, but they are asking for basically the same kind of rules to be applied to them as are applied to other categories of signs. It's interesting that one of the issues that came up in the case that caused the U.S. government, the Solicitor General's office, to file an amicus brief in the case is what is the level of review that should be used by the Supreme Court in taking a look at this ordinance and deciding whether or not it violates the First Amendment. The church is arguing that strict scrutiny should be applied. That's the highest level of review that the court can apply. And for a law to survive strict scrutiny, it has to be the least restrictive means of achieving a compelling state interest. The town of Gilbert believes that intermediate scrutiny, which is a lesser standard review, should be applied. Intermediate scrutiny will uphold a law as long as it advances important governmental interests unrelated to the suppression of free speech and doesn't burden substantially more speech than necessary to further those interests. The Solicitor General filed an amicus brief arguing that intermediate scrutiny should apply, but they disagreed with the town of Gilbert and said that under the intermediate scrutiny level, the town ordinance fails and it does not comply with the First Amendment. It was a very interesting argument this morning. One thing that I noticed was that there didn't seem to be as much interruptions as you often see with some of the justices interrupting each other and interrupting the questions and interrupting the answer that the lawyer attempting to give the answer is making. In fact, they were very inquisitive in their inquiries as to how this ordinance works and also, of course, what level of scrutiny should be applied. One of the questions that Justice Scalia asked was, if the concern of the city was public safety and to avoid clutter, and those were the arguments that the city put out to justify its ordinance, one of the questions that Justice Scalia asked is, well, then why is there no limit on political signs if your concern is clutter? Because there's no limit on the number of political signs that can be put up in comparison to, for example, the directional signs of the church. And the answer of the town was that, well, the ordinance did that because they were complying with a state law requirement with regard to political signs. Justice Scalia raised a laugh in the courtroom when he then said, so your answer is that the state made us do it. There were also questions by Justice Kagan and Justice Breyer that indicated that those two justices, who tend to be more liberal in the outlook, were also skeptical about this town ordinance. Justice Kagan also focused on the very generous provisions for what are called ideological signs and said that does seem to be a content-based discrimination and that would potentially fail whether the standard review is strict scrutiny or intermediate scrutiny. Justice Breyer at one point he posed a specific hypothetical about a particular sign that the church could put up in answer to the town of Gilbert saying basically that, yeah, that would violate the town ordinance. Justice Breyer said that it sounded like the town was being a bit unreasonable. You know, none of these questions, of course, predict the outcome, but it seemed pretty clear that the court was skeptical of, frankly, the differentiation that the town was making between different kinds of signs and the reasons that they were giving for doing that. The town of Gilbert did make the argument that if the court struck down their ordinance, it would lead to chaos and to sign ordinances being struck down all over America. Their lawyer said that the only thing that that kind of a ruling would have the opposite effect, because it would mean that towns would be placed in this position of, frankly, wanting to strictly ban and restrict all kinds of signs to avoid litigation, and so things would actually get worse. The church, which is represented in this case by Alliance Defending Freedom, actually pointed to an amicus brief that had been filed in the case by, I think it was the National League of Cities, which made the point that there are many, many ordinances on signs all across the country that have withstood litigation and challenges, and are actually examples of what Gilbert could have done, which would have been acceptable and would not have violated the First Amendment. In fact, the counsel for the church pointed to the District of Columbia, where the Supreme Court is located, for its sign ordinance, which does not make these kind of distinctions, for example, with temporary signs between ideological, political, and other signs, but treats them the same. The government, even though they were not a party in the case, did get 10 minutes to argue on the review standard, but otherwise the case was argued by, of course, the lawyers for both sides, and we have no idea when they will issue the decision, but the only thing we know for sure is it will come out before the end of the term in June.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUSCast. For more episodes of SCOTUSCast, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at www.federalistsociety.org/multimedia.